But is evolution a progress to a higher pinnacle point? Well, Ted Lefroy is going to question that for you this morning, and your head will be reeling by the time you roll into your autumnal march. But don't go away this morning, because all last week, I spent the week asking questions of the education sector. Is a university research position the best way to solve the problems in education in Tasmania? Is having an academic at the uni, hiring other friends who are also academics, the best way to solve the problem of young people coming from traumatized homes into school struggling to learn? We spoke to people who deliver the programs, who asked questions. We spoke to people who are at the uni. Well, this morning, Frances Underwood, whose family endowed the chair in memory of the late beloved Governor Peter Underwood, will be with you and will address what, let you know what her intentions are and what she wants to see happen with the chair, the centre, I keep calling it the chair, the Centre for Educational Attainment. All Latinate words, by the way, which if you're not very well educated, you probably haven't learned. There you go. So I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with her about that and to see what insights she's gained as she's been having conversations with people and who she's spoken with. And on a lighter note, it was the first ever Theatre Awards in Tasmania over the weekend, and you'll find out who the winners were. Looking forward to that as well. Were there any fights?
You're with Rick Goddard.
So evolution, right, is a process of things slowly over time getting better and better until they're perfected. And humans, of course, are the pinnacle of evolution as far as we know of life in the universe. We're the conscious being at the top of the pinnacle. Ted Lefroy from the University Centre for Environment brings in these topics to dissect and play with and get your mind moving. And nice to be starting that in the month of autumn. Hello, Ted.
Morning, Rick.
So, I mean, we've sat with this idea of evolution for quite some time. Humans do like to put themselves at the centre of the universe. Have we recovered from the fact that we're not the middle?
No, we haven't.
Do you think?
No, we haven't. And it's a persistent myth that evolution is progressive, but it's not. Neither in theory nor in practice is evolution progressive. I know that's challenging, but think of it this way. Evolution is the process by which a living organism adapts to its immediate environment. If the environment changes in a particular direction, then evolution may look regressive in order to fit the environment. So it's about fitness. Evolution through natural selection is a reactive process. We are locked into this waltz with the Earth. Where the Earth goes, we go. It's not always upward and onward. Think of it. And the example, you picked out a little article in The Conversation, which is intriguing, a lovely Australian story. About people from the West Australian Museum who discovered these deep aquifers in the Murchison Basin. So underneath, deep underneath the Murchison River, there are these isolated groundwater systems, and they found 52 of them, all separate. And within each one, they found a separate species of water beetle, blind, wingless water beetle, all of them related to two species you can still find on the surface. And by looking at the genetic code, they pieced together the story that sometime between 5 and 10 million years ago, when Australia was going through a period of aridity, some of these water beetles followed the water down into the aquifer and then became trapped there. So this layer of calcrete formed, like cement, as the water table went up and down, and then they're locked in. And that was intriguing enough. They found 52 aquifers, but 99 species, separate species of beetle.
Isn't life amazing? I mean, its ability to just exist.
Yeah.
In these places, it's persistence. We sometimes think that, you know, we're a miracle of survival in an otherwise lifeless universe. But, I mean, given a chance, it has a crack.
It does. And not only does it have a crack, but in order to adapt to that new environment, they lost eyesight and they lost their wings. So they became blind and flightless, but they're still water beetles. They're still predators. They're still munching on things.
Could you, were this a debate, argue that that is technically an improvement in relation to their environment?
You can if you stick to the line that evolution is adaptive. They adapted perfectly to their new environment. Is that progress? Well, they lost their eyesight, they lost their wings. As a lot of people say, that was regressive, and it is regressive, but it's adaptive, and that's the point.
Why do you think, I mean, we're so attached to the idea of moving forwards, aren't we? I mean, I thought that phrase was going to get killed off by overuse by the previous federal government, but somehow it stayed with us. I don't know why. How are we different, do you think, as people, if we think about fitness to place, our degree of adaptation? How might we change how we operate than if we think about progress to the bright, shining future of better land.
Well, that's my mission, Rick. That's why once a month we expose another myth of nature. And I think we would be better off if we understood it as adaptive rather than progressive. The idea that evolution is progressive goes right back to Plato and Aristotle, the idea of the great chain of being. So you had humans and animals and plants and minerals and nothingness, and it was in that order. And then when Christianity came along, they added God and then the angels, then the fallen angels, then humans, then animals, then plants, then minerals and nothingness.
And what was so great in the medieval ages, and I love these, is they would hire genealogists. I mean, genealogy is so popular now and people still basically doing the same thing, I think. Mm. But genealogists would trace the royal family inevitably back to God, to actually direct descendants from God. That's how you'd be related to this guy and then that king and then Jesus and then God.
Exactly. And that is still so attractive that it's still in our makeup. You know, it's a meme that's very sticky and hard to move, but it's more socially and politically significant. It's not biologically significant at all. Think of this fact. There are about 10 to 15 million different species on Earth now. Okay. But 99% of everything that has ever lived on Earth in the last 3.5 billion years is extinct.
Because that's part of the process.
Exactly. And the other thing is that we have these events, that we've had five major events in the last 500 million years that sort of set the clock back, right? So the last was 66 million years ago when an asteroid landed in the Gulf of Mexico. Until then, the dinosaurs were dominant as the land-living animal. And there were ocean-going dinosaurs, the ichthyosaurs, and they dominated the oceans. When they left, that's when sharks emerged for the first time as the dominant predator in the ocean, and that's when mammals emerged. So, you know, our ancestors were these little bug-eyed things like lemurs living in the forest, keeping out of the way of the dinosaurs. When the dinosaurs left, then, you know, in the competition for adapting to their new environment, we just think of that lineage as progress, don't we? And sure, you can say, okay, in the last 70 million years, the size of primates' brains has increased in complexity. And there is a tendency towards greater complexity between these periods, these dramatic periods of change, as species compete with each other for resources, for energy. But then there's the contingent nature of life is there's no guarantee of progress.
It's 7:15 on 936 ABC Hobart, and you're waking up with Ted Lefroy, Director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania, who is giving you a nice provocative start to the week. There's no evolution. You're going nowhere. There's no progress. When your manager says the team needs to move forward this week to higher sales, you can go, no. It's a wider question, actually, I've been talking about with a few people over the week about Tasmanianness. I want to find a way to define what's special about Tasmanianness that's positive, something about the way we live here that is fit for living, or that is, I mean, sustainable is not really the word, but, you know, people can have lived in the big cities, they've done that, and they've strived for the best of the top of everything, and they go, you know what? You can live here and wear slightly less expensive clothes and a less expensive car with a less expensive boat and a less expensive house, but you can live really well. You don't have to strive to the top of the thing of the best of this. You know, the idea of that is a bit misleading.
It is. But what I found fascinating, I moved here 10 years ago and I read Robson's book, A Short History of Tasmania, which is 30 or 40 years old, but fascinating because he paints a picture of tremendous regional diversity, relatively small island, but the West Coast, the Northwest, the Northeast, the Southeast, the Huon were all separate communities, usually isolated, only accessible by sea when they set up. And the different social and cultural norms have emerged. And part of that is geographic determinism. And you have this tremendous diversity of place, which I think makes Tasmania.
Which is true of our prehistory, Aboriginal history, and
exactly.
Also
nine
what we call history now.
Nine quite separate nations. And the remarkable thing is there's still enough information to piece together Lyndall Ryan's book, The Tasmanian Aborigines. And it's amazing how, you know, you can count seven or eight current communities, quite distinct, and there were nine nations. So, I mean, you know, it is fascinating. And to me, that's what is so Tasmanian.
And then how do you have that conversation with people of saying it's about fitness of place, it's about aptness? So rather than survival of the fittest, is it survival of the aptest?
No, well, think of fit like jigsaw, not fit like gym. So survival of the fittest is survival of those best fitted into their circumstances. So it's not about physical fitness. Mm. It's about appropriate fitness to place.
Because language changes so much how we think about ourselves and how we think about others. And this came up because a friend of mine had a mate over from Sydney who was dissing everything Tasmanian and stuff. Mm. And he was going, I couldn't explain to him why it's good here. Mm. That it's not so shiny and flashy and we don't groom as much. And the, you know.
Well, that's his problem and our advantage if he can't see it.
That's what we know in Tasmania. But you see, governments struggle so much then to have a narrative of that. That it's better to live here because something we care more about each other, or exactly. We care more about belonging, or we care more about something, rather than appealing to some abstract ideal of a top that isn't there.
Exactly. And we shouldn't apologise for that. Although this whole business of educational attainment partly has its roots in those very separate communities emerging in isolation, I think. And, you know, that doesn't excuse it, but it explains, I think, why.
Why does that explain it, Ted Lefroy?
Because you've had these very isolated, separate communities, the Northwest, the Northeast, the Huon, and physically difficult to travel between in the early days of settlement. And they've got their very strong sense of community and sense of place. I mean, that should have been overcome, you would think, sometime in the 20th century by having an education system that would make up for those differences. But, you know, I think there's still that element of those strong regional differences.
And is it maybe that governments always try and come up with solutions that apply statewide without talking to each of those different communities and understanding there are different cultural approaches to learning, to family, to belonging?
I think
that
it could
be addressed
well be.
By their education system.
I think
system.
It could well be. If you're a parent in the Huon or in the Northwest, would you want to see your child at 16 or 17 have to go away to go to high school? It's nuts, isn't it?
And possibly come back more educated than you and possibly criticise your values and your way of living in life.
No.
Well, there's a question.
No.
You
now
don't think that's
cynical.
An issue?
I think it's just
I've heard that raised by people.
Have you?
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Anyway, some questions to put to Frances exactly. Underwood when she joins me after 7 o'clock this morning.
And I'll be listening with interest.
Ted Lefroy, it's 10 to 7 on 936 ABC Hobart, and that is where we've been led today by looking at the idea that there is no progress. Evolution is merely about being the best fitted in to the place within which you are. Take that into your day and smoke it. I mean, healthily, just vape it, actually chew it. No, you can't even do that anymore. I don't know. Let's put it in a glass case for an emergency.
The exposure.